Today is February 7th, 2018, and this is episode number 448 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am prepared to fetch both hot and cold compresses in case either is needed.
You know, that's great. I love that you are just totally prepared for anything and that you're flexible enough for hot and cold.
You could just call me Nurse Brian.
Okay. And I just realized, Nurse Brian, you had more to say, but I was just so amazed with your
compress
it's ability.
It is both hot and cold compress.
That's amazing.
Abilities. Yeah. It's, I can fetch either in case you need either of them.
That's really awesome.
So hold on. To get the full story, this is the one I'm supposed to use. To get the full story on anything we have to cover in this podcast, including hot and cold compresses, You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. Or if you want to tell us anything or comment on anything or offer us any ideas or yell at us, whatever, go to facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. And join our community there.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
Speaking of which, we had a question, didn't we?
We did.
I had a question. Who was it that wanted to know that?
Well, if I had the right window in front of me, I could tell you. You know, I only have, 34 inches of display to work with?
Uh-huh. Okay, I feel like this is going somewhere really inappropriate.
No, this isn't Pop 0.0. I was just going to point out that clearly my display isn't big enough for me to look at a web page with Facebook on it when I'm recording a show because, you know, of all the windows that I have to have, I must need a bigger display. That's all it is.
So the question came from a Chuck Williams. He asked, are there any numbers on how popular Apple Music is on Android? Elake Stubblehouse mentioned that he didn't even know that it was available on Android, which is probably a marketing failure on Apple's part, though Elake is not an Android user, so maybe not. But he claimed that exclusivity was very successful with iPod. I actually personally disagree with that. I think that having Apple Music available on Android is probably a very important thing to Apple.
I agree. I think that Apple wants to own a big part of this space, and they get that they need to extend beyond their own ecosystem for platform support to make that happen.
Right. So, agree with all of that. So, Elake had found some numbers from a year ago. Let's see here. They claimed your sausage here.
Yeah, this
we didn't actually research this. 10 million. So based on that, I calculated that this week Apple Music on Android hit 12.75 million downloads, which is not necessarily the same thing as subscribers. And that was a year ago. I can't imagine that it's anywhere near that high, because at that point Apple was only claiming 20 million Apple Music subscribers, and there's no way that half of them were on Android. That doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. So what we can definitively say is that, yes, there are Android users on Apple Music, but we don't know how many.
Yeah,
likely a minority.
This person was saying 7 million. He was estimating 7 million based on 12.75 million downloads and based on the 4 and 5 star ratings that, of course, I mean, just like it will happen with some, you know, Samsung products or YouTube or Google products on iOS, you know, the haters are going to rate it poorly.
Sure. Of course they are.
Right. So anyway, this person was estimating, and his I don't know, it's a reasonable estimate, but 7 million out of 12.7 million downloads, that's probably a little high. That's probably a little high. I would guess that's high. But certainly millions.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly millions. And it's an interesting topic for sure. Because you got to realize, too, that some of those people are going to be Apple customers who have to have an Android device or choose to even have an Android device. Maybe they've got an Android tablet or, mm-hmm. Maybe they have an Android phone for work.
Yeah. I know a lot of people that love their MacBook or MacBook Pro, but are so annoyed for whatever reason with the iPhone with iOS and Apple's App Store that they choose to use an Android phone instead.
Right. Yeah, I've heard of people like that, and if, a lot of people who are already baked into the iTunes ecosystem, some of those people are going to have converted over to Apple Music subscribers too.
Sure,
but yeah. Anyway, an interesting topic. We appreciate the comment on Facebook.com/group/context machine.
So I just realized, here's how that played out. Hey, do you guys know how many Android users there are on Apple Music? Us. Yeah. Nope.
What do you mean?
How is that for a good summary of that entire conversation?
Oh, well, yeah, but we found the number. Nope, but let me look it up.
You're just totally ruining the humor here. What is up with that?
What? Oh, was that humor?
Oh, man. You don't do well when it gets hot out, do you?
No, it's like 80. Well, it's, all right. It's 75 degrees here in the Bay Area. In February, early February at that.
Yep, February
75. And I cry foul. And it is like my life is so tough. My house stays really cool until about 3 in the afternoon, and that's only when if the temperature gets over 90. It's nowhere near that. It's only 75 out, so the house is actually kind of cool. A little too cool for a hoodie, but it's a little too warm to wear a hoodie, so I'm all cranky.
I totally get it. It's hard to be a princess.
It is hard to be a princess.
Yeah,
it is hard to be a princess.
And I put up with you because I love you, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Likewise. I mean, thank you. Thank you. Right. Okay. So we have three topics. John Keat over on Pop Point O, that's the not safe for work video podcast I do with John Keat. You might have heard of it.
I might have heard of it. I had no idea it would be not safe for work. I mean, I know John, and he's always the model of decorum.
Yeah, or something. Anyway, he's been doing this weird thing where he announces the topics that we're going to talk about at the top of the show.
So there's no anticipation?
Yes. So I thought maybe we could try the same thing. It seems like a good idea.
Okay, I just want to point out that you said John Keat does this. It seems like a good idea.
All right, I accept your admonition, but
I'm okay with that.
We're going to try this today. So, topic one: the Center for Humane Technology.
Okay.
Topic two: Apple Watch Cardiogram and Wilford Brimley.
And Wilford Brimley.
Topic three. Can nice Apple content succeed? There you have it. Those are our three topics.
Great. Doom, 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 doom. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. How is that for a Pavlovian reflex?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. All right. So Center for Humane Technology. Interesting. Did you catch this story? We were going to talk about it yesterday on Tuesday's TDO.
We were, but
it didn't work out.
No, but that's okay because we were having such a great discussion. So that's all right. So Center for Humane Technology, am I interpreting this correctly? in that they're afraid that the technology we have today is too addictive, and they want that to stop.
Yes. They want companies to stop making, trying to, actually, there's a great quote. Let me find it. You know, okay. Again, we are top men.
Top.
So I don't men. Actually have anything pulled up and ready to go. Let me find this here. Humane. Wait, it can't be off. Is that off the top page already?
Doom.
There it is. All right. They had this great thing. Great quote. I love this quote. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Google have produced amazing products. I'm quoting from the Center for Humane Technology. And we'll tell you who's involved in this shortly here. But Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Google have produced amazing products that have benefited the world enormously. But these companies are also caught in a zero-sum game for finite attention, which they need to make money. Constantly forced to outperform their competitors, they must use increasingly persuasive techniques to keep us glued. They point AI-driven news feeds, content, and notifications at our minds, continually learning how to hook us more deeply from our own behavior. There was another quote too. Another supercomputer. The largest supercomputers in the world are inside of two companies, Google and Facebook. And where are we pointing them? Pointing them at people's brains, children.
Wow.
Now, this guy is Tristan Harris. Let me make sure I'm getting that right. Yes, Tristan Harris. And he used to be the in-house ethicist at Google. Matter of fact, all of these employees are coming out of Google, Facebook, not all of them, but the people who are behind this organization are coming out of Google, Facebook, and including one Apple exec, one former Apple person, Lynn Fox, who was a bigwig in the PR department for a long time.
Okay.
Most of the people are coming out of Google and Facebook.
I'm still stuck on the part about how they had an in-house ethicist.
You know, I mean, Google is weird. Google, they seem like they want to do the right thing, and then they go around doing the wrong thing. I mean, like, their entire business model is the wrong thing, in my opinion.
Well,
that's very much my opinion, and there's a lot of people who disagree, and I don't care. They can all be wrong. I'm okay with that. But, like, I don't think that the people at Google are evil by any stretch of the imagination. I just think they're doing the wrong thing. I don't think Mark Zuckerberg is evil. I do think that in his rush to fabulous success, he did not learn the difference between what he can do and what he should do.
You know, he should have watched Jurassic Park. That's a really great lesson on just that.
I bet he did. He just didn't get that lesson.
And then instead of, just taking that line to home, he thought, oh, I can make dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah. So this the Center for Humane Technology, you remember that guy we talked about? Goodness. Now I'm going to get his name. Can't remember his name. He's an Indian fellow. He used to work at Facebook. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. He was
pretty high up in the ranks, and he was pretty upset with what he helped create.
Yes. Oh, you know, which is pretty easy to do when you're already a multi-million times over.
Yes.
Where is he on this page? I'm not seeing him on this page. I thought he was involved. Maybe he's not involved. I thought he was involved. I thought very specifically he was involved. All right. Well, we won't talk about that. But apparently not. I'm not seeing him on their leadership page. But the whole thing though is they're saying, look, we know how Google and Facebook operated. I should also add that in this group's messaging, they don't call out Apple per se, although Apple is kind of part of what they see as the problem from the standpoint that Apple, like, for instance, one of the things they talk about is how notifications in red, that little badge, it psychologically makes you need to interact with it. And then they talk about how companies use the science of colors to manipulate us.
Mm-hmm.
So one of their solutions is to make your smartphone gray screen. I'm not doing that. Right. And they're really talking about third party companies. They don't accuse Apple of engineering iPhone to be addictive. As a matter of fact, I would love to point out here that one of the reasons why Apple Watch came into existence is because Apple wanted us to get our faces out of our iPhones. At least that's what they've said, and I believe them.
Yeah, I'm inclined to believe Apple on this one, especially since Tim Cook has said at least once that people shouldn't be spending as much time in their technology as just in general as people tend to do, which of course is really easy to say when everyone on the planet wants to use your smartphone all the time. But the whole thing with give us an Apple Watch so that we aren't looking at our phone every moment of every day, that fits with that whole philosophy.
Yes. Yeah. And like Tim, here's something from Tim told The Guardian back in January, all the way back in January, a couple of weeks ago. I don't believe in the overuse of technology. I'm not a person that says we've achieved success if you're using it all the time. I don't subscribe to that at all. There are still concepts that you want to talk about and understand in a course of literature. Do I think you should use technology a lot? Probably not. And he went on to say, I don't have a kid, but I have a nephew that I put some boundaries on. There are some things that I won't allow. I don't want them on a social network.
So Tim Cook,
for instance,
won't let his nephew use social networks.
Yeah. Didn't Steve Jobs do the same thing?
I don't even know Steve Jobs knew Tim's nephew.
For his kids.
Also. Oh, come on. That was funny. Again.
You're just, I bet, too he did. Hot. What do you mean? He knew Tim Cook's nephew. What are you talking about? They were close.
The joke you said.
Mostly pedantic.
It wasn't about pedantry. It was about the joke. And so.
Yeah, I know, but you're laying. Anyway. So I think Steve Jobs said the same thing about his kids, that he wouldn't let them on social networks. But so anyway, the Center for Humane Technology does not specifically cite Apple for providing tools that the social networks are able to use to addict us. And most, like, they do cite Apple as part of the solution, and they encourage, for instance, like they said, like, if you know people that work in these companies, talk to them about this, right? Which is interesting. It's an interesting mm-hmm. take. But so Apple is really mostly mentioned as part of the potential solution, and almost everything that they're doing is complaining about the social networks specifically, and then Google as well.
So social networks are very frustrating right now because they're all very aggressively trying to get us to spend more time on their networks. And Facebook, they want to be the only platform that people use.
Yeah.
So the algorithms are using the way they're massaging what we see to try and get us to want to see more is really concerning.
And then, and that's one of the things they're talking about. That's one of the things they're talking about. So they encourage you. So they aren't just complaining. They encourage us to turn off notifications from machines. Like, the only notifications you should leave on are for people, to wit, iMessage.
Okay.
right? So turn off your notifications for Facebook. Turn off your notifications for YouTube. Turn off your notifications for Instagram, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's one of their solutions. Another solution they have is to put only apps that are tools that you need on your homepage and remove everything else from your page. So get them out of your face.
Actually, I like that idea, but
sure.
My iPhone's a business tool. So I only want the things that I need to use all the time on my homepage.
But the thing is, to me, they have a tough road to hoe, because the problem that they're talking about, which is social media addiction, is a problem that people like having.
Yeah.
There aren't many. Okay. Look at cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, for decades before the anti-smoking movement really took off in, like, well, I don't know, the 90s, maybe that. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, when bars started, when states started passing laws that made smoking in bars illegal, for instance, that sort of thing. Right. That really started that. I know some of that happened in the 80s, but it really, I think more states did it in the 90s. And, you know, now I'm actually, like, really surprised today to walk around and see someone smoking a cigarette here in the Bay Area. Your mileage may vary depending on where you are. Mm-hmm. The Bay Area is a weird bubble for sure.
Yes.
But my point is that for decades before that happened, some people did wish they could stop smoking and complained about smoking. And I remember seeing commercials in the 70s for some kind of clinic that claimed to be able to help you beat the habit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that was going back to the 70s, and smoking was extremely accepted at that point. So right now, though, in comparison, we don't have a lot of people saying, I wish I could spend less time on Facebook.
No, but we do have a lot of people on Facebook that complain about being on Facebook.
Interesting. Yet. I solved that by just not getting on Facebook, and except for, like, when I was specifically directed to something or for a group. I do like Facebook for a group. That's one of the community aspect of Facebook, I think, is one of its good contributions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep. It's,
but I ignore my newsfeed, my personal newsfeed.
Matter of fact,
I would imagine that I'm on Facebook, happily on Facebook, I might add, for the Apple Context Machine group, probably 10 times, 20 times for every one time that I'm on personal use, and for the Mac Observer too.
Yeah. That seems about right. Yeah. Facebook is frustrating in that there's some really great things, and it's allowed people that otherwise would have never been able to connect or reconnect to do just that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time,
I love that aspect of Facebook. I love all the people I've been able to connect with.
Yeah, it's great, and I love that I can feel like I'm a part of my friends' lives, no matter where they are in the world. Yeah. But man, I sure don't like the way they present content to me, because it's clearly designed to keep me on the page, not to show me what I want to see.
Yes. Yes. I don't like that. Yeah. I don't like being manipulated. I really don't like being manipulated. I don't like being manipulated at all. I resent it.
Yeah. I'm with you.
So I don't know where they're going to go. They put together a campaign with Common Sense Media, which is a activist group. They put together a $7 million campaign aimed at kids called The Truth About Technology, designed to keep kids from being, to help kids not become addicted to technology. I don't know how successful that's going to be. I don't know how successful their mission's going to be, but we have some really bright people involved in this, and they're people who do know what's going on. So Be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah. I think they've got a really tough job ahead of themselves. But I do like the idea of someone being out there in a prominent position saying, hey, you know, isn't it just kind of creepy and wrong that social networks are trying to manipulate us into being addicted to their services?
Yeah. You know, it's that zero sum game. This is one of the excesses of capital where, you know, it's got to be more. You know, they like Facebook can't just make a platform designed to give us what we want. No, they can't just do that. No, they have to grow. They have to more engagement. They have to get all of our attention and that's partly why that one quote just really grabbed me, because I thought it was such a great putting it. These companies are also caught in a zero sum race for finite attention,
which to me explains a lot about the tactics that they use, because if we're not using their services, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, whoever, they're not making money.
Yeah. I just wish, you know, I'm going to blame Google for a lot of this, right? If Google hadn't have perfected this business model where we're the product, be different. Like, you know, if we could pay for Google or if we could pay for Facebook, so that, you know, Facebook's goal was to get us to subscribe, not to have us have our face glued on Facebook 24 hours a day.
Yeah, but we're much more valuable.
Much more valuable, yeah.
Yeah.
And I blame Google for that.
Yeah. I don't ever see Google letting us pay to not be tracked or not see ads, because value in us is far too
great. They do on YouTube. You can pay $99 a year and watch YouTube without commercials.
You're watching it without commercials. That's not the same thing. I mean, it's part of the thing. But you're still being tracked.
Yeah, you are still being tracked. That's for sure.
And your data is still being sold. So, right.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Access to your data is still being sold.
There we go. Yes. Access to your data.
Yeah. Mostly pedantic.
Well, in this case, your mostly pedantism is totally appropriate.
All right. So let me dive into a little bit of iron.
Okay.
We'd love to hear from you on our Facebook group, what you think about this whole social media addiction thing. And if you would instead prefer to write us at acm@macobserver.com and tell us to go F ourselves. Understood.
And if you'd prefer to interact with us on different social networks, I'm Jay Gamut on Twitter. And who are you on Twitter?
I'm Tim O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y.
Yeah. You also have a really nice Instagram feed.
Oh, thank you. I do. I appreciate that. It's what is it? Geek Tells. TELLS.
And my Instagram feed is Jake Gamut.
So that's all. That's
all. It just seemed appropriate.
Social networks.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we don't have a Snap presence. Well, I do a personal Snap presence, but we don't have a Snap presence.
That I'm okay with that for now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm okay with that for now. We'll do that later. Alrighty, so topic 2, Apple Watch cardiogram and Wolfer Brimley.
I shouldn't be laughing.
Yeah, you're only encouraging me, but what we're really talking about there is the diabetes.
Don't eat that, you'll catch the diabetes. They'll have to cut your leg off.
Wilford Brimley actually has nothing to do with this whatsoever, except for the fact that I cannot hear the word diabetes or read the word diabetes without hearing Wilford pronounce it as diabetes. The diabetes. I don't think he ever said that either, but I've heard that elsewhere.
Now, because we just retconned history.
Yeah, yes. And the story is that Cardiogram, they make a fitness tracking app that has an Apple Watch component as well as an Android component. Mm-hmm. And they enlisted 14,000 of their users, more than 14,000, to participate in a study. and they wanted to figure out if they could predict lots of things based on the data that they're able to get from existing smartwatches. Like, that's probably the best way to put it.
Okay.
And today, Wednesday, February 7th, they announced that they can found
out Wilford Brimley has diabetes.
The diabetes.
Oh, that's right. The diabetes.
Diabetes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, they said that with 85% accuracy, using only heart rate and step count measurements, they can predict diabetes and prediabetes.
Okay. So just being able to predict the diabetes or pre the diabetes.
I'm so glad I could ruin you for this too.
I think we're actually ruining our listeners. They're probably like, please just stop with the diabetes. Anyhow, just being able to predict that is pretty impressive.
Yeah. They're very careful not to say diagnose for legal reasons.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're
being identify, I think they say it identify.
Yeah. And that's different from a diagnosis.
Yeah. So according to their numbers, and they were, I think the CDC, one in four diabetics do not know that they have it. They are undiagnosed. And 88.4% of people with prediabetes, which includes me, by the way, except for I do know it. Prediabetes being a state where you don't have full blown diabetes, but you're headed there if you don't like become unfat, because it's fat around your pancreas that can help give you the diabetes.
And you have,
at least that's my understanding. I'm not a doctor. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
And but you've been working on improving your health. So
yeah, sort of. Not the point. 88.4% of people with prediabetes don't realize they have it, according to the numbers that Cardiogram was citing. So what Cardiogram says it can do they did this, by the way, with a deep neural net, right? Mm-hmm. They took 33,628 person weeks of health sensor data. Of course, with 14,000 users, that only took a, you know, 2.4 weeks thereabouts. But anyway, so they got 33,600 person weeks of health data, and they trained their neural net with that data, and then they exposed the neural net to samples of people with and without diabetes, hypertension, sleep apnea, atrial fibrillation, and high cholesterol. And today's announcement was only about the diabetes portion of the study.
So with the data that they collected just through Apple Watch and
heart rate and step count.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I don't recall, did you say what level of accuracy they were having with this?
85% for diabetes. I don't know that I don't know if they're including prediabetes with that, but 85% with diabetes.
Still, that's really impressive.
It is really, I mean, it's not perfect. And as a matter of fact, there's far too many people that could get false positives and false negatives with that number. 15% is really, really high.
Still, what I'm getting out of this is that Apple Watch and, by extension, other more sophisticated health and fitness tracking
And devices. Android Wear. They were specifically using Android Wear.
Yeah. Okay. So these devices, they actually can help medical researchers gather a lot of useful information where they can then turn around and start finding more information that's useful to us. You know, like gather all this information and like, oh, hey, we can predict.
Okay. Diabetes. Yeah. No, listen, that's great from a holistic standpoint. Yay research. But more importantly, they could, if they choose to do this, they could choose to say, hey, Brian, you probably have diabetes. You should go check that out, dude.
Yes.
That's so like on an individual level, individual people could be alerted to this, even if they're not like looking for it.
Yeah.
Right. They're not this is just from data that's being collected already. They could tell you.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I mean,
now the question is, would being armed with knowledge actually get people to change their habits?
Some people, yes. Some people, it doesn't matter what you do, they won't change. I have an uncle that passed away last year because he refused to change and he blinded himself to what he was experiencing. He'd become morbidly obese to the point where he needed to have two canes just to move around. Mm. And he had become diabetic. He was having heart problems and it was just on and on and on.
Sure.
And he refused to listen to his doctors. He refused to pay attention to what his body was telling him. And in the end, he died. And it was horribly tragic and it was sad and it never had to happen. So my point is there are plenty of people that will choose to ignore all of the warnings. But there are other people that if they caught a notice on their watch that said, you know, you're starting to show signs that could indicate diabetes. Do you want to set up a doctor's appointment? And you tap the little thing and it sends the message off to your doctor, gets the appointment set, and away you go.
Right.
That's incredibly powerful.
It seems like they're opening themselves up to potential liability in our litigious society. For instance, why didn't you note it like for a false negative? Why didn't you catch it? I'm going to sue you. You should have told me that I had diabetes.
You know, we live in a lawsuit happy society. It doesn't matter how good, how altruistic, even how accurate your process is. Someone's going to sue you because that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the case. So it's super interesting. And this is all separate, by the way, from Apple's non-invasive glucose monitoring. That, right? That's a moonshot on a different level.
Right.
But I mean, like the two combined would be super powerful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with the data that they're using to, with 85% accuracy, predict if someone is a potential diabetes patient. Mm-hmm. Combine that with what Apple's doing with non-invasive blood glucose monitoring, and you can have potentially a very reliable system for picking up early warning signs and then helping monitor someone through treatment to hopefully not get diabetes.
Yeah. True and true. So it's interesting development. Cardiogram gets a lot of credit here. Their neural net seems to be pretty powerful.
I'd say so.
Oh, you know, we're in such early stages for things like neural nets. I mean, Cardiogram isn't a technology giant. Right? They're not some, you know, company doing $100 billion a year in sales. They're an app maker. Actually, I don't know what else they do. Cardiogram. There's a movie called Cardiogram.
Oh, I wonder what that's about.
I'm looking. Let's see. Telling you, Cardiogram. What's your heart telling you? They do iOS apps and Android apps.
All right. Well,
right. I mean, like, and they put together a neural net that can. We are about to see some dramatically accelerated advancements in technology and learning from neural nets and machine learning.
I think so. We're at not even an infancy stage, I think, with this. And when it starts to really take off, because of the accelerated rate where this sort of technology advances, I think it's just going to go nuts. We're going to go from where we are today to being able to have essentially our own personal medical monitor system with high accuracy with us all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. It's a lot of things are going to be changing. Like, you know, like so much has been changed. Like the rate of change is so fast that it's very difficult for the vast majority of us to keep track of it all. And it's going to get faster.
Yep. I'm excited to see where this goes. I kind of like the idea of if something goes wrong, like let's say I'm out hiking and I fall and hurt myself in a way where I'm incapacitated, and my Apple Watch is like, oh, okay, just detected a sudden drop, and now I'm not detecting movement. I have a cell signal. I'm going to go ahead and alert authorities and transmit the real-time medical data that I'm gathering. Mm-hmm. That'd be pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, I'll do my best to not fall. Because, yeah.
That's nice of you.
I know. It just seems like a much better way to enjoy the backcountry. Yeah.
It really, really does.
Yeah.
Really, really does. All right. So, see, we have a third topic. Our third topic is, can nice Apple content succeed? This is kind of, we arrived at this at kind of a convoluted route in our, you know, when we were putting the show together, which believe it or not, we actually do.
But you mean put a show together?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We actually do work on this despite all our protestations to the opposite.
Yeah, and because of it, we end up with topics, and
right.
So the question that our convoluted path led you to was: can Apple really be successful in the original content market if they're going to do this this prudish, puritanical sort of way of
well explain that's the end point.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was saying.
Start us down the path, which was your information about Brian Buehler. Is that right?
Brian Fuller.
Fuller.
Okay. Yes. So here's the deal. Brian Fuller, who has been involved with various Star Trek series, he was involved with American Gods and Hannibal. And he's been around for a long time, and he is very talented in this industry. So he was going to be running Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories reboot for Apple. So that's pretty exciting right there. Well, what's happened was, he's not part of the project anymore. So he wanted to have a show that had more of a Black Mirror feel, and Apple didn't.
Black Mirror being a Netflix show,
right? Which
is quite dark.
Yeah, and it's, you know, each episode just stands alone, and you have some sort of fantasy, supernatural, psychological, whatever sort of thing happening, and
with this sort of science fiction kind of feel to it,
right? And each episode typically is giving us some perspective on some social or political or current thing.
Right. And it's just one of the examples of dark, edgy content that has been very successful in having outlets like Amazon or Hulu or Netflix to come out on.
Mm-hmm. And Apple doesn't want to go down this path with
apparently
with Amazing Stories. So this is coming from Hollywood Reporter. They got the exclusive on this. So what they're saying is that that Apple and Brian Fuller, they had creative differences about what direction this show should take. And so they mutually agreed that it was time to just part ways. So the leap that I'm making with this is that Apple doesn't want to have that kind of darker, edgy show.
Yeah, because I mean, the original Amazing Stories was not all that dark.
No, it was more...
It probably wasn't even as dark as like the original Twilight Zone.
No. Amazing Stories, I mean, it had some of those aspects, but it had a much more lighthearted, brighter feel to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it was...
And this was a show back in the 80s that Steven Spielberg did for TV.
Right, and it was designed to run during prime time, so, you know, a family show sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that's the path Apple prefers to take with this. They want to do a brighter family show.
Well, I mean, you say guessing, and you used a wording that suggested that you know, we're having to sort of like, you know, guess at this. But I mean, Apple has a long track record under Steve Jobs and Tim Cook of, you know, pretending that there are, you know, that porn isn't a thing.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, like we know that Carpool Karaoke was delayed because Tim Cook wanted the profanity cut out.
Right.
And personally, I found the Apple Music version of Carpool Karaoke to be flat, to be a lot less fun and interesting than the also no cursing version that was on James Corden's Late Late Show, the original Carpool Karaoke. The Apple Music version, I don't know, it left me pretty flat, and I blame wanting that profanity cut out. There's just something unnatural about that. It's not the way people, especially when people were recording originally, not knowing that they had that limitation. I think that's actually probably the problem there. Like, right. So, you know, they didn't know that they needed to not cuss. So they, you know, they were cutting up and doing their thing with a different set of rules. And then it was recut with a different set of rules.
Yeah. That's hard to work with.
And it's hard to work with. Yeah. And I think that's why it came out flat. So maybe actually, hopefully season two would be a lot interesting, more interesting, even if it still has that limitation, as long as people know that that's what they're doing before they get in front of those cameras.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
assuming there is a season two.
I didn't watch all the episodes of Carpool Karaoke. I mean, I was enjoying it at first, in just a very superficial, this is a nice diversion for 20 minutes. But a couple of the episodes that I saw, they were like 12 minutes long, I think. And it felt like there wasn't even enough content to really do the episode. And when I watched the one with the Cyrus family and Billy Ray Cyrus, the whole thing looked like he did not want to be there at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, okay, and now I'm just uncomfortable with this. And I never got back to watching the last few episodes.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't make it as far as that one. So I would say that the evidence that we have at our disposal says that dark, edgy content is popular, desirable. And I wish I think that Apple, if Apple's going to be putting out original movie and TV content, well, actually, we don't know anything about movies yet, but
it's a natural extension of what they're doing.
It's a natural extension. There have been some movies. There have been the documentaries and music-oriented documentaries and things like that. But if they're going to be putting out original content, I think that they should not limit it to the same kinds of limitations that they have imposed on the App Store. And I think that Apple, of all companies, should be allowing the exploration of potentially controversial content.
I agree. And I'm now, after today's news with Fuller, Brian Fuller, I'm wondering how much Apple is going to try and mold Ronald D. Moore's sci-fi series.
Yeah. Although, you know, Ronald D. Moore definitely has produced stuff that would fit well with what we understand as the.
How about Battlestar Galactica? Do you think Apple would have been okay with that as it is?
Would Apple, like, for instance, have wanted to cut the rape scene?
Yeah.
You know, that's a good question. That scene just freaked me out.
Yeah. Yes. And how about in one of the episodes where they did a flashback to I just forgot her name. Seven, is that right? The red dress.
Trisha Huffer?
Yes.
Anyhow. Wasn't she six?
Six. That's right. She was six. So they did a flashback to her on Caprica before the Cylon bombing started. And she's experiencing a lot of this culture for what appears to be the first time. And she sees a baby in a stroller.
Yeah, she was six.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she kills the baby.
Right. Because she was curious. It seemed like, to me, I always took that as she was just kind of curious as to what it would be like to do that.
Yeah, she just wanted to see what was going to happen. And so she did it and walked away. Yeah,
that's how I always took that.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, creepy and disturbing as all get out.
Yeah. I mean, actually, to me, it's more creepy than intentionally, maliciously killing the baby.
Okay, there is plenty of room, and I think I've said this before, there's plenty of room for content that is not dark and edgy, right? And there's plenty of room for content that is not porn, for goodness sake. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not saying that I want Apple to get into the porn business. And I'm okay with Apple keeping porn off the App Store. I don't know that it's the decision I would make, but I'm okay with Apple making that particular decision because, as Steve Jobs says, you want porn, there's plenty of places to go.
Yeah, and he's right. There are plenty of places to go.
Totally right about that. So, but I don't think that Apple's original TV business should be like, you know, Disney Family Channel.
You know, if they're doing Disney Family Channel, and to be fair, Disney has a lot of viewers, but I don't think that's the right path for Apple to take with Apple Music. I think they need to try and draw in a wider audience.
Yeah, more particularly, when you have the opportunity to have someone like Brian Fuller making a dark show for you, being produced by Steven Spielberg, you should probably go for it.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Write the checks and let it go.
It's not that I want Apple to specifically seek out the dark stuff, but why limit yourself from that when something great or potentially great? Maybe this would have been the rare thing that Brian Fuller did that stunk. But you know, why limit yourself from doing it?
Yeah, I agree. And God, man, I hope they don't do the Disney thing because.
Well, they are.
Well, no, so I mean, like follow Disney's model, because those shows, I, th- I think are horrible. It's all, every you're, one of the them
Disney
is,
family. Specifically, you're talking about the Disney family stuff. Disney does also do stuff that's, you know, semi dark, not edgy, but I mean, you know, there's certainly lots of violence.
Well, we may get to see something new from Disney because they're saying, yeah, we think we'll let Deadpool be Deadpool, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but Disney family.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. If you've got the chance of doing programming like that, do it. Not everybody has to watch it. If you don't, you know, people who don't want to watch it won't.
You know, and Apple's in a position where they haven't been pigeonholed into a type of show. So they can do a lot. I mean, they can have those bright, just kind of family friendly, superficial shows. They could do something that's edgy. They can do something that's darker. They can have all of this. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Okay. To that point, I love the idea that Apple would also produce stuff that wasn't dark and edgy, that is family friendly, that is light, uplifting. And you know, if it's good, as long as it's good, mm-hmm. right. It's not like that. I don't want Apple doing that stuff too. I get a little bit leery of the idea of Apple specifically canning this stuff. That can you imagine if Apple Music didn't allow songs with profanity? Didn't allow songs with violence? Didn't allow songs with sexual innuendo? Now they do, of course, put the lyric warning. Mm-hmm. On songs like that, but can you imagine if they just if no, I'm sorry, your album's not welcome.
Yeah, and then where does it end? Because I mean, songs that
I know where that ends. Where that ends is no one goes to Apple Music.
Yeah, no one goes to Apple Music. But from Apple's side, at what point do they say this and no more? I mean, do they stop like Christmas songs? Baby, It's Cold Outside. That's a really creepy song.
I love that song. I love that song. But it is a creepy song.
It's a really creepy song.
Like, iTunes would have been a huge failure if Steve Jobs had insisted that you know, no naughty lyrics be on the iTunes store. It would have been a disaster. It would have been a complete catastrophe. We would not be having this conversation right now.
No, we wouldn't.
Right? So, I don't know. Okay, here's how I can imagine the conversation going.
Okay.
Tim, I can imagine the conversation going like this. You know, I want to produce content that I'm not afraid to watch with my family. You know, if I'm going to put Apple's money into something, I want it to be something that I'm very proud of and that anybody could watch, and that anybody could sit down in front of their Apple product and watch this stuff. And there's plenty of places for people to get dark and edgy stuff elsewhere. So why don't we focus on the more wholesome entertainment side of things? I can see that conversation going that way. And an argument can certainly be made to that effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm concerned that Apple may try and take too much of a heavy-handed approach to controlling the shows, as opposed to letting the experts that they hired do their job.
What the evidence? Okay, the evidence so far says that Apple is giving. Has given those executives, in particular, we're talking about
Jamie
Ehrlich and Zach Van Amberg.
Yes,
right. Mm-hmm. He's given those. Tim Cook has given those two guys, or maybe you know Tim Cook and Eddie Q, have given those two guys marching orders. Mm-hmm. Like, here are the parameters. Here's some money. Go make it happen. That's what the evidence says. Too far. This is. The first time that we've gotten an indication that something has been in the works and then Apple has slowed it down, put the kibosh on it, redirected it, et cetera. This is the first example that we know about that.
Yeah. And Now, for all we know, the description we're getting, where it's more Black Mirror style, maybe this was like way beyond Black Mirror, and maybe this is like really disturbing television.
Yeah, sure. Maybe Brian Fuller was wanting it to go in a really awful direction. That's actually possible. We could be making mountains out of molehills.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, it could be that Apple's like, you know, no, that's like too far out there, and we're not going to do an entire series where every single episode disturbs the living crap out of every person.
Right. And I have heard like people who like Black Mirror talk about the fact that it's, you know, disturbing or creepy, or, you know, freak them out, or, you know, it's really different. And these are people that like the show.
You know, I just recently started watching, and so I saw the first episode and I really enjoyed it. And it was really disturbing. And I know this is not a new series, but for those of you that haven't seen it, I'm not going to ruin the shock of that episode for you. But after I watched it, I was like, you know, I want to watch more, but I think I'm going to go finish The Good Place first.
So, yeah, all right.
So now I have finished season one of The Good Place.
Okay, and let's. I know we're out of time essentially, but just to sort of take a devil's advocate position against what everything we've just said.
Uh huh.
It's possible that Ronald D. Moore's piece is a little dark.
Based on what we know about his series, there has to be something dark to it. So here's the premise, because we do know this now. So you have this husband and wife and their daughter, and there's some kind of accident, and I don't know if the mother dies or she's incapacitated in a hospital, like long term. But the dad and the daughter, in trying to fix whatever this was that happened, end up getting pulled into this other universe, where they're now in the middle of this war, where there's this massive oppressive power.
It's a portal fantasy, but a science fiction one.
Yeah. And so now they're stuck in this other universe. They're trying to survive. They become wrapped up in the battle to save this planet. So, you know, that's kind of a dark thing there. That's not going to be a sitcom.
That's not going to be a sitcom. All right. So maybe Apple is absolutely headed down a path that we're going to enjoy, with some amount of darkness, some amount of edginess, right? And that it's not all going to be Disney family stuff. But in this particular show, it was just too far over the edge for you know, Tim's and Eddie's comfort.
Yeah. So.
That's possible. Yes. And I hope so. Actually, I hope with the information that we have at hand, I hope that that's what the case is.
Yeah, I'm hoping that when we see these shows rolling out, that we don't feel like Apple hobbled them.
Right. And for all we know, you know, the Steven Spielberg may have also been in the, you know, I thought about this side.
Yeah, that's totally possible. There's a lot we don't know about this. Right. So, but I'm not surprised you and I just had this extended conversation based on Apple's track record.
Yeah. I'd love to know what people think, what people are expecting. We're all different on this. You know, when I've complained about this in staff meetings, I've gotten pushback from one of our family oriented team members.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, basically told me that I was just flat out wrong, and that you know, it's such a relief to have you know, family oriented stuff that they don't have to worry about. The idea of that is really appealing, etc. So, you know, everybody's different somewhere along the spectrum in a different way. Let us know what you think. Facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
And with that, we're out of time.
Yeah, I believe we are. And that That's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Oh, I'm going to do the Facebook link. Or you can go to facebook.com/groups/context machine and leave us a message there. So, hey, thanks for listening.
Indeed, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.